I wasn't here last week because I taught a retreat, and I came home from the retreat, which is often the case. I came home from the retreat with a really tender heart. If any of you have been on a residential retreat, you know how a lot of practice really allows you to soften and open to your experience, and it really touches the heart. And so I wanted to, when I came back, decided I wanted to revisit the heart practices this week in my talk. And how do we cultivate a tender heart? You know, a heart that's open to all and that wishes well for all. And that can be challenging. And I'm betting that most of you are familiar with the standard heart practices: metta, loving kindness, compassion, mudita, appreciative joy, that Sharon Salzberg, she outlined them beautifully in her book, Loving Kindness. It's a really good book if you haven't seen it. She goes into each of them quite in a very beautiful way and detailed way, and gives examples of meditation. And so that's what we're very familiar with, this saying phrases for different sets of people, starting with ourselves and loved ones, and then people we may not be crazy about, so that we expand our hearts and open our hearts to all beings, ultimately all beings. But the interesting part of that is that that wasn't in the suttas. The Buddha didn't actually teach that particular form of heart meditation. That was developed in the 5th century, so several hundred years after the Buddha lived. It was developed by this monk in Sri Lanka, Buddhaghosa, who wrote what's called the Visuddhimagga, which is a real systematization of the Buddhist teachings. And he laid out this way of practicing. And it's helpful, but it is very helpful. And it's also interesting how the Buddha talked about these qualities, because he did talk about loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity in a lot of suttas. And he talked about it as when we practice insight, when we practice present time awareness and being still and being grounded and being open, and not being caught up in thinking and future and past and greed and hatred and delusion, these qualities naturally arise. They're what is there when we get rid of all this other junk. And he says the mind is imbued with these four qualities. He said that we sit imbued with, you know, one quarter loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, joy. And he says, above, below, and all around, everywhere in its entirety, he, the monk or the noble disciple, pervades the all-encompassing cosmos with an awareness imbued with goodwill, with compassion, with appreciative joy and equanimity. Abundant, expansive, immeasurable, without hostility, without ill will. So that's just one sutta where he says that. But he says that many times. We have a heart and a mind that is just tender and open and wishes goodwill to all beings, because we have gotten rid of this ill will, this craving, this aversion, this ignorance, these states, these tender heart states that are usually called the Brahmaviharas, or the sublime abidings, the place of really sublime being, or they call them different things in different practices. They call them boundless states in some teachings. The Tibetan, they call them the four immeasurables. So they're these beautiful qualities that develop naturally and that are incompatible with ill will. And when we use mindfulness to recognize when there's ill will, when there's craving, when there's, you know, aversion, when we're caught up in not liking something or wanting it to be different, when we recognize that and can let it go, we're left with these beautiful qualities. And we need some help with them. We can't just go, oh, let me be that way. Because if we could, then we'd all be that way. Because, right? But it's not that easy. We can't just power our way through it or bear down, because that's kind of what we do. I'm going to bear down, grit my teeth, and power through and get real kind. That's, you know, get real compassionate. And instead, we just have to recognize, you know, that it's a process, as with many things. It's a process. And one of my co-teachers last week, Ian, when he was talking about this, he talked about them as, I don't know if I have exactly his quote, I didn't write it down, but he said, it's a gift, these practices, metta, compassion, loving kindness is metta, they're a gift of our heart for others and for ourselves, which I think is really lovely. It's a gift that we're giving others, it's a gift that we're giving ourselves. And so I just want to go through them briefly. Metta, which we often say metta because it's short for loving kindness, it also means goodwill. It's this unconditional love and benevolence towards all beings without discrimination. When we wish for the well-being for all beings, that's what metta is. You know, may you be well, may you be happy. Many of us are familiar with the Metta Sutta, which wishes all beings, born and to be born, you know, all beings, omitting none. So that encompasses everything. So we have a heart that wishes well for all beings. And that's kind of the default state. We just have this heart that wishes well. And then the next one, compassion, is what arises when we're faced with pain or we're faced with the suffering of others. And it's an aspiration to alleviate the suffering of others. It's that empathetic feeling of wanting to, you know, remove pain and wish others' suffering to lessen. That's where you get the vision of the not the bodhisattva. Well, bodhisattva is a person who wants to work for the liberation of all. But you see these bodhisattvas of like Guanyin, who's an embodiment of compassion, or Avalokiteshvara, who's the embodiment of compassion as well, so that you have these people who are, I love the image of Guanyin where she's sitting, she's sitting, not cross-legged, she has one leg crossed, but the other she has her knee, and she's got her arm on her knee, and she's really, they call it the pose of royal ease, where she's just at ease, but she's ready to jump in at a moment's notice. And Karuna, the word in Pali, means quivering of the heart, which means we are touched by the pain of others. We're not robots or automatons. We're actually touched by others' suffering. The third one I have found to be the most challenging. It's mudita in Pali, and that means sympathetic joy, or I like to say appreciative joy, which means we are happy for the wholesome good fortune of others. When others have good luck or good fortune, get a job, fall in love, have a kid, you know, win the lottery, whatever it is, we're happy for them, period, which can be really challenging because oftentimes there's this little flavor of jealousy, there's this little flavor of where's mine kind of thing, but no, it's really, wow, I'm really happy for you. And because that's wishing well, and that's an arising of the heart of that is like expanded upon. This is the compassion and mudita, compassion and appreciative joy, are like metta that has met a particular experience, and then it goes, it either expands with joy or compassion. And then equanimity is this balance, this even-minded state of responding appropriately. You know, you have this heart that is imbued with loving kindness, goodwill for all beings, and then equanimity allows you to recognize, oh, this is someone's suffering, there's compassion. That's the appropriate response. There's someone experiencing joy. I'm experiencing joy for them as well. So it's really beautiful. It encompasses these heart practices, these teachings of the heart encompass all experiences. As Ian said, a gift of the heart for ourselves and for others. They're how, I saw this note somewhere, they're how we respond to any experience, any social contact. They are without greed, hatred, and delusion, which are the three poisons. You know, we see clearly what's happening and we respond with the appropriate response. Normally, as how we move through the world is we're reacting. We're reacting to things. We're not thinking. Oftentimes, we're just mindful. We're just going through the motions and something happens and we react, autopilot. And a lot of times, it's driven by an emotion, an underlying emotion like fear or anger or jealousy or something. And so we react from that state rather than this clarity and saying, oh, this is what's happening. What's the appropriate response right now? So there's this slowing down, which is why we practice meditation, because meditation enables us to slow down, to pause, to find our ground, and then respond. You know, and it's really difficult, but it's so necessary. And I was thinking about it, there's this sense of connection when we can be open to others. You know, instead of shutting down and coming from our particular points of view and prejudging or whatever it is we do, when we can have this open-heartedness, this spaciousness, there's this sense of connection which can be really fulfilling. I was buying cat food yesterday and I asked the guy in the store how he was, and he said he was tired. He's practicing to run the LA Marathon, which is next weekend. And so he's running every morning. And we had this lovely conversation, and he's never done it before, and he's running by himself, and he's out there every day practicing, and he showed me a picture of himself before he started training and now that he's training and how he's gotten into great shape. And we had this really lovely little conversation. And I said I was going to be out. My girlfriend's running the marathon, and I'll be there cheering her on, so I'll look for him too. And it was just, I had such joy for him. And it's because we're just, you know, it's just this, we make space, we're not in our minds, we're present, and we respond with kindness. And then joy. I'm still, when I think about him, there's this joy that arises. And I doubt if I'll see him. I mean, because there's like, I don't know, 20,000 people who run this thing, and I'm not going to see every single one of them, but maybe I will. So, but that's how it is. And so there's this sense of connection when we get to open to others. And I want to read a poem. I saw this posted the other day, and it's actually 14 years old. It's written by Zenju Earthlin Manuel, who many of you may know. She's a Zen priest. So let me read this. It's really lovely. It's for all beings. May all beings be cared for and loved. Be listened to, understood, and acknowledged despite different views. Be accepted for who they are in this moment. Be afforded patience. Be allowed to live without fear of having their lives taken away or their bodies violated. May all beings be well in its broadest sense. Be fed, be clothed, be treated as if their life is precious. Be held in the eyes of each other as family. May all beings be appreciated, feel welcomed anywhere on the planet, be freed from acts of hatred and desperation, including war, poverty, slavery, and street crimes. Live on the planet, housed and protected from harm. Be given what is needed to live fully without scarcity. Enjoy life. Living without fear of one another, be able to speak freely in a voice and mind of undeniable love. May all beings receive and share the gifts of life, be given time to rest, be still, and experience silence. May all beings be awake. And I really love that, that takes in so much. And as I said, she wrote it back in 2010, but it's certainly apropos today. I don't think it's never not appropriate. You know, and as I was reading it, and I'll share the link in the chat. As I was reading it, I was thinking, how can we not want this? How can we not want this? And I think what the practice is around this is if we want this, but we run up against some people we feel should be excluded from any of these. And that is really worth noting without judgment. It's not about judging, going, you know, you really should. It's about recognizing what gets in the way. You know, it's an invitation to begin to pay attention. Perhaps having this aspiration, I really wish I could wish this for all beings, but there's certain people I don't want it for. So to recognize that, you know, it's greed, aversion, this ill will, ignorance, they keep us chained. They keep us chained to a place of perhaps not wanting good for others. You know, we think perhaps people should behave a certain way. And if they don't, that gives us free rein to abuse them or wish harm on them. That there's the you know, the lovely taste of Schadenfreude, you know, being happy at the misfortune of others, which I must say I have experienced in my life. It's like, oh, they deserve it. But that is a place of ill will. That's aversion. That's wishing harm upon all beings or in a particular being. So, you know, I know it's a big lift to do this, but I want to walk this Eightfold Path. One of the pieces of it is not causing harm, not wishing ill on anyone. And so, you know, I don't want to take the risk of going down that slippery slope of this person I wish good happiness for, not that person. Who am I to judge who deserves to be held with care? And because I don't know everyone's story. And we're so bound up in what happens to others. You know, I was thinking about, for those of you who have sat with me before or listened to the podcast, you know I have a gun store right around the corner. And that the people who shop at the gun store sometimes park not in a good way, and they block driveways, and they move things out of, you know, they move garbage cans and do things that I can react in a split second. I have yelled at people. I have, because the window's right there, and I can see what's going on, and I go running out there, and I go, blah, blah, blah. After the fact, I realized I shouldn't yell at people who are buying guns, but in the moment, I'm not thinking. And it was very recently, somewhere in the last 2 months, I was leading a Metta group on a Friday afternoon. My friend Ian has a Metta group on Friday afternoons, and I sub for him sometime. And I think it occurred to me that, because there's a category in this traditional thing, practice, that there's difficult people. People you don't care for. And I realized, oh, hell, I have to bring those gun people into this. You can see how happy I am about it, but it's part of the practice. Because what's happening is I see people walking down the street, random people, I don't know where they're going, and I get tense, my jaw tightens, I go, ugh. It's not impacting them at all. But it's impacting me, you know. I was reminded Sister Clear Grace Dayananda, who is a monk in Thich Nhat Hanh's tradition. They talk about you know, don't pick up the stick of self. And when I get into that place, it's like, I don't like them. And I begin to create that separation. And I create that separation. And that's when we can dehumanize others, because we create stories about who they are. And it's easy to begin to go down that path. And that's not what I want to do. And so the aspiration is to come back, to be gentle, to wish this, you know, do I want them to be clothed and fed? Of course I do. I go back to the poem. Do I want them to be beat up, you know, in an alley? Of course I don't. So I have to, you know, bring that practice of open-heartedness. You know, when I'm not paying attention, I get stuck in the reactivity. When I'm paying attention, learning to pause, come back. It's really powerful. And I think we have to also recognize that it's not about condoning harmful behavior. It's not about that. We take care of ourselves. We set boundaries. It's about, you know, working to end injustice where we see it. It's always about that, however we can, wherever we are. It's about not causing harm for ourselves, not causing harm for others. There's really a lot in that, in this practice. It's not just about acquiescence. It's about having clear view, wise view, seeing what's going on, understanding, but not carrying hate in our hearts. Not carrying that. That doesn't lead us anywhere. It's not sustainable. Anger can be a launching pad to doing work, to taking care of things, to, you know, to marching in the streets or whatever it is, but it's not sustainable as a way of being. It can be really toxic. So to recognize when it's there, but to not let it rule, and to really see if you can carry that softness. And one thing I wanna briefly go over what we call in this practice. The qualities have what are known as near enemies. So just because it's really helpful. Near enemies are these qualities that seem like loving kindness and compassion, but they're just a bit off. So metta, for loving kindness, there's a quality of conditionality. I will love you if. So it's a little bit transactional, whereas metta, loving kindness, and all of these are unconditional, you know? There's no expectation. I'll do this for you, but I'm keeping score. It's just this open-heartedness with no expectation of return in any way. It's because you're a human being or whatever you are, and I care for you. I want you to be well and happy. And then compassion. The near enemy can be pity. And again, that's putting ourselves at a different level. Oh, you poor thing. I'm glad I'm not you. We don't say that, we think that, we feel that. It's not. It's just this quivering of the heart, karuna. Or sometimes we can feel overwhelmed by the challenges of other people. And again, that's making it about us. I can't handle what you're going through. And so to recognize that, you know, if we just open our hearts, take care of ourselves as well, but keep our hearts open. And then sympathetic joy, or appreciative joy, there's, as I mentioned, there's this comparing mind, you know, where's mine? I'm happy for you, but where's mine? You know, that bringing the I, me, my, picking up the stick of self. You know, there's that flavor of jealousy or competitiveness. It's often driven by a sense of lack that we feel. It's like, oh, there's not enough to go around. And of course there's enough to go around. And then equanimity can very oftentimes feel like a sense of like indifference. It's like, it's not. It's this capacity to respond wisely and appropriately. You know, there's a balance and a care in equanimity. And another way, another near enemy is spiritual bypass of equanimity, which is using spiritual practices to avoid feeling. It's like, oh, I'm so equanimous. Oh, it means I don't feel. Oh, you know? No, the heart is touched. If the heart is touched, and that's where the sense of connection comes in. This spiritual bypass is a real disconnection. It's like it's a wall that we put up around ourselves. You know, we practice, you know, we pray harder to not feel anything. Sit more so we don't have to feel anything. More retreats, more meditation so we don't have to feel. But I go, you know, that's not how it works. Anyway, so it's really important that I think it's really important. There's the wisdom piece of it, and then there's the heart piece of it. There's no separation. I mean, we can try and separate it, but when you really cultivate clarity and wisdom and awareness, there's the natural arising of compassion and kindness and joy. They just show up. It's just what's there. Because when we're clear, when we practice, when we begin to have compassion for ourselves, we have more compassion for others. It's extraordinary how that happens. And so we can use these practices, you know, the remembering, oh yeah, I wish you well. You know, may all beings be happy. May all beings be free. You know, it's that Southern expression, well, bless their heart, but really meaning it. Instead of just kind of a dismissive thing. And, you know, when we have this love in our hearts, we allow others to be free. We're free and they're free. And as Fannie Lou Hamer says, nobody's free till everybody's free. It's true. We have to, because if some people aren't free, or we're not free, or we're caught up in this craving, somebody's going to get hurt somewhere. So when we're really mindful, really paying attention, that's when there's a lot of freedom. And what I think is important is to keep investigating. Where are you in this invitation to be loving? And what gets in your way? You know, when do you hit the wall and go, no, not them? And again, without judgment, it's all about recognizing, oh, what's this about? Why am I saying yes to this and no to that? So it's all continually investigating just what's happening, tearing away or peeling away, we like to say, the layers of the onion, because this practice gets more and more and more subtle. You think you got it, and then bam, something else comes up, and it's like, oh, I'm still working on this, as we all are, because I'm not dead yet, and I don't see enlightenment anywhere around the corner, but I want to just keep practicing because my life has transformed because of these practices, and I have had so much more liberation and freedom and joy than I could ever have imagined. So I'm just going to keep walking this direction. So thank you so much, my friends. I wish you all well. I wish you all health. I wish you all happiness, and I so appreciate your kind attention. Thank you for visiting Undefended Dharma. These teachings are freely offered. However, if you would like to make a donation to help support the technology that makes these podcasts possible, please visit marystankavage.org/support. Thank you.